Welcome everyone to a Baseball America podcast. Along with Aaron Fitt, I'm John Manuel. We are done with regionals, headed to super regionals on the Baseball America College podcast. And Aaron, you're still live in California, although you will be back here in North Cackalack for super regionals. But obviously an exciting regional round. And you could stay in California for one regional, one super regional, I should say, this week if you wanted to. But I think that we might have one of the most compelling super regionals right here in our backyard in North Carolina. We've got – so we'll just set up the eight super regional. We've got Louisville, Cal State, Fullerton, at Fullerton, Arkansas, Florida State, Virginia at Ole Miss, Rice at LSU. Those are all Friday through Sunday. Then TCU at Texas, Southern Miss at Florida, Clemson at Arizona State, East Carolina at North Carolina. Those are all Saturday through Monday. So, Aaron, let's kick it right off with Louisville at Fullerton. You were at Fullerton this weekend. You made it sound on the website and on the college blog that, like, the Titans were playing at the top of their game. How big of a challenge is this going to be for Louisville to go out there? And I'd say what percentage chance would you give them to knock off the Titans at home?
Not a very good chance, John, and I have a lot of respect for Louisville's program and their team. And, I think Louisville won a very difficult regional. I mean, that there were four really good teams in that regional, in my opinion. And, you know, Indiana didn't really show up, but Indiana had been hot, you know, and certainly a mea culpa on that pick. That one didn't work out so well. But you know, Louisville, they were certainly the best team in that regional. The thing is, Fullerton is just firing on all cylinders, and you know, this is as good as a team, you know, as they've had there since they won their national championship in 2004. And they've had some great teams over the last few years, but I couldn't be more impressed with their offense. Certainly, the relentlessness of that offense, the aggressiveness of it. They just take extra bases at will. They have so much team speed, but they play such great defense. And their pitching, you know, their pitching looks really good. I mean, I saw Tyler Pill on Sunday. He was phenomenal, as advertised. And Noe Ramirez was outstanding again. And Daniel Rankin battled through eight solid innings, and he looked pretty good. So, I mean, the bullpen has been figured out there. They've got their guys in the back, I just think that this team has no weaknesses. They're at home. I'd be very surprised if Louisville pulls this off. That's not to say it can't be done, because Louisville has a lot of power. And if the ball is flying out to right field the way it was there on Friday and Saturday, then that could play to Louisville's advantage. That can be a hitter's park at times in the right conditions. So Fullerton's got some power also. Chris Davis is a beast, John.
That's awesome.
This should be. I think it'll be an interesting regional, but I do think Fullerton wins both.
I do think it's awesome that a key part of Fullerton's team this year, that Chris Davis has been an offensive force. And we knew how good their sophomore class was, Aaron. I think we thought that maybe their senior class would provide some of the power. And in Jerry Clark, he does a little bit. But Chris Davis really turning it on as a junior, I think, is a difference maker for this team. So they've got talent in the freshman and sophomore classes. But I think they needed an upperclassman to step forward. And Chris Davis has done that for Fullerton. For me, I do think it's an interesting contrast of styles. But I don't think this is not some Judy team that Fullerton has out there. They can hit. They are offensive, so I really like their chances to win this regional. I do think Louisville deserves kudos for having won a very difficult regional and having to grind that out. And just another, there are a lot of interesting pitching choices made over the weekend, and a team with Vanderbilt's depth on the mound, I was very surprised to see them bring Mikey Minor back on 2 days' rest.
I agree.
And, that only worked for one team, Ole Miss, where Drew Pomeranz pitched heroically. On 2 days' rest, we'll get to that in just a second. The next super regional, I think we're both picking Fullerton there. Arkansas at Florida State, Aaron, and boy, Arkansas, which had a great season and then had a 6-week stretch where they just really couldn't beat anybody. I think they won one series in those last 6 weeks. Arkansas suddenly discovers its offense. A team that went into regionals hitting .267, they discover their offense and really kind of pull out a can of something on Oklahoma at Norman. Very impressive regional win for them. Now they have to travel to Florida State, and Florida State, which I think we both thought deserved a top eight national seed, winds up getting to host a super regional anyway. And Aaron, Florida State looked awfully impressive in that regional, knocking off Georgia, Marist, and Ohio State. Obviously, putting up some stupid numbers against Ohio State with that 37-6 win. For me, I'm looking at this, and boy, Arkansas better bring the bats again. I still don't think it'll be enough. Florida State at home is a huge difference maker. That's a tremendous team at home that really takes advantage of its home ballpark. I like Florida State in this super regional because I just think it's going to be a real challenge for Arkansas's offense to perform up to that level again.
Yeah, you know, this is one that I really went back and forth on, honestly, John. And, you know, for Arkansas, there's a couple of things to mention here. First of all, their big guns have finally showed up. They did a lot of the heavy lifting this weekend. You know, Shepikoff and Andy Wilkins and Zach Cox, the guys who we thought would be the big bangers in the middle of that lineup, played well. But also, this is not the same team, you know, as it was earlier this season, because they've really infused some life into this team by inserting some freshmen into the lineup. You got Bo Bigham at second base now as a true freshman. You got Jared McKinney in right field oftentimes as a true freshman. You got James McCann behind the plate as a true freshman. Colin Kuhn in center field as a redshirt freshman. I mean, the last two classes for Arkansas were both highly regarded classes. I think we had both of them ranked at roughly the top 12 or so.
That sounds about right.
And both classes were deep and provided just a large quantity of quality options, and I think that's what's saved Arkansas's bacon here, is they were able to mix parts around, and they have a deep roster. Their freshman and sophomore classes, you know, are terrific. I mean, you know, Andy Wilkins and Brett Eibner, those guys have been very good as sophomores, at least down the stretch here this past weekend. I think this is interesting. I mean, I do think Florida State's going to win it. I can't go so far as to pick Arkansas on the road here. I do think Florida State has still the better offense, but I think it's pretty compelling. I wouldn't be surprised to see it go three games.
Yeah, I wouldn't either. And I'm actually with you in that I think that Arkansas is going to play well. I do think Arkansas, it seems like they've gotten a little more speed into their lineup, which I think has always kind of been an important key for Dave Van Horn's teams. And that does help create some offense. And I still have questions about Florida State's pitching. I just think if that were a neutral site, super regional, I would really like Arkansas's chances. But I think either one of those teams at home, I'm going to take the home team. And that means I'm taking Florida State.
And I do think Florida State, you know, they've got some reliable starters at least with Sean Gilmartin and Brian Bush, the lefties, and then a really gritty righty and Mike McGee. I mean, those are three solid guys.
Mike McGee, pretty underrated player.
Absolutely.
That guy's gritty and gutty, and he's good. So those are three good things to be. Speaking of good, the Virginia Cavaliers on as much of a roll as any college baseball team that we've seen in a couple years, not named Oregon State. Virginia is 46-12-1 right now, and yet, with that gaudy record, being ACC tournament champions, they have to go to Irvine, as we've all recounted. We all saw them beat Stephen Strasburg in the opener, and they beat Irvine twice at Irvine's field. And now Virginia's reward is they get to go on the road again at Ole Miss. Aaron, I think this is one. There are three super regionals that really stick out to me, and this is one of them. This is, I think, going to be a tremendous super regional. I already mentioned with Ole Miss, Drew Pomeranz. His line last night was just tremendous.
Yeah.
And he was the only guy who pitched on 2 days rest who was superb. Very often when pitchers come back on short rest, it's not the start where they come back on short rest. It's the one after that where they struggle. So, boy, I'm going into this one thinking that Virginia is – like a snowball that started small and it's just gotten a lot of momentum and gotten a lot of size, and I think it's gonna be very hard to stop Virginia before they get to Omaha. I'm picking the Cavaliers in this one, but this is I think a fascinating super regional because Ole Miss has got left-handed pitching, and Virginia's lineup leans almost as heavily to the left as North Carolina's.
Yeah, you know, I also am taking Virginia. I mean, I couldn't be more impressed with Virginia, and I've seen them 10 times this year, John. And even in the two games they lost out of those 10, I was impressed with them back in the early part of the season when they lost a couple of tight ones in North Carolina. And they just have finally gotten it all going now. I mean, it's just a really exciting team. They're solid in every single phase. They're an outstanding defensive team. Just made highlight play after highlight play and all the routine plays as well in Irvine. They have a lot of team speed. They have more power than they've ever had there in the last 6 years. I mean, Jared Parker is an absolute stud there in center field and atop the lineup. It's a deep lineup. It's a great approach. On the mound, they've got a very solid bullpen with Kevin Arrico and Tyler Wilson setting them up back there. and they've got three quality starters in Robert Morey and Andrew Carraway and Danny Holson, of course, the lefty. So I wonder what Pomeranz is going to have left in the tank next week. And like you said, it can be that start afterwards that really catches up to you. He's key for Ole Miss because he's their best pitcher. He's really been the only guy that they've been able to count on consistently. The other guys have had their moments, Philip Irwin and Brett Buckvich and Nathan Baker. Those guys have had their moments, but they've been a little more up and down, and they're not the kind of guys who are going to shut down an offense like Virginia's. So, the atmosphere is a little bit of an X factor because certainly Ole Miss plays very well at home, but Virginia, I think, has shown that it can go on the road and win. I like the Cavaliers here.
Yeah, I mean, I think I just Drew Pomeranz can't pitch every game. I mean, 16 strikeouts on 2 days rest like he did last night, that's remarkable. It's really remarkable. And he is a lefty, and he's a really good lefty. But I don't know. I think that's what you have to have to beat Virginia. You have to throw some left-handers at him and some left-handers with some stuff because they've shown they can beat the best right-handers in the country. They beat Strasburg. Not like they pummeled him. But they did pummel Alex White. I don't know that Ole Miss has those kind of right-handed arms, but they do have those. I mean, they're good. But, I mean, Nathan Baker's left-handed, correct?
Yeah.
So you're going to have Nathan Baker come through, although he's not even necessarily in the weekend rotation. Brett Buckvich is left-handed. So you have a couple options other than Pomeranz. I'm starting to talk myself into picking Ole Miss, but the other factor here is I just think Virginia's a better offensive team.
Me too. And John, for me, I'll also add that I'm worried about Ole Miss's bullpen after
absolutely
the way Jake Morgan melted down against Western Kentucky. Give Virginia a very clear edge in the bullpen here. I mean, I will add this, though, as a caveat, because you mentioned it. The left-handed pitching is key. Noel Avison for Irvine kept Virginia in check on Sunday for about five innings, and they still were able to get enough to win that game, of course. But you can at least keep them in check if you got a good lefty.
I mean, Daniel Babona did it and was really kind of let down by his defense, right?
Well, they didn't face Babona. Babona went against Fresno.
I'm sorry. Who was the pitcher that Irvine used against them?
They used Noel Avison on Sunday, and they used Christian Bergman on the right-hander
right
on Saturday.
Okay, that's right. I'm remembering my regional wrong. But, yeah, like you said, I mean, Virginia's very good offensively. It's a deeper lineup. I think that's a great super regional. That's all there is to it. That's a great super regional. I'm not picking against Virginia right now, not at this point, not with the head of steam they have going. We mentioned it over the weekend. Try to think of another team this year, Aaron, that has won six of their last seven games have been against two wins against UC Irvine, beating Stephen Strasburg, beating North Carolina, Clemson, and Florida State in the ACC tournament. I don't think any other team in the country has a stretch of six wins in a row like that. Can you think of anybody?
No, I think that's the best stretch of 2 weeks we've seen from anybody all year long.
Yeah, I think Virginia's playing as well as anybody in the country has played all year. They're number five in our weekly rankings, which are updated at baseballamerica.com. Not that they really matter this time of year, but they are there. So, and then the other super reason on this side of the bracket that is just so compelling is Rice at LSU. And I actually got an email, and we're going to take a couple emails actually here in between brackets at podcast@baseballamerica.com, where someone pointed out that on Warren Nolan's rankings, that LSU is the 7 and Rice is a 10 in the WarrenNolan.com RPIs. We have LSU number 1 in our rankings this week.
That's right.
I think LSU has lost two series all year. It's been great start to finish. They won the SEC regular season and tournament. I don't understand why they rank low on all these RPI kind of rankings, but I think we both thought Rice should have been a top 8 national seed, and LSU as a 3 was almost underranked as a number 3 seed. This is going to be a tremendous super regional potentially, but something tells me that Rice has spent everything it has to win that home regional. I think LSU is actually going to roll in this. I think LSU is better set up on the mound. I don't know how many more heroics Ryan Berry has left in his shoulder, but I'm going to guess it's not one more weekend. And I'm picking LSU actually to kind of roll against Rice. I think good pitching beats good hitting, and LSU's got more good pitching.
You know, I was debating this with a scout today, John, who's seen both of these teams, and he agrees with you that he thinks LSU is going to roll. I think it's going to be competitive. I think it's going to be a three-game super regional. I do think that Mike Ogila at 84 to 88 miles an hour, which is apparently what he's been the last couple of weeks. I mean, hey, give him credit. He's really, really gritted out a couple of good performances here. But that's not going to get it done against LSU. It's just not. Those guys are too good offensively. You know, Ryan Berry's been pretty good. He's not quite back to where he was earlier this year. The reports I've gotten are he's about 88 to 90, you know, so he's not 89, 92 like he was, you know, before he got hurt. But he's been obviously terrific. I just think Rice finds a way to pull out a win here. This team is so tough. I mean, they're just so mentally tough and well-coached and resilient, as they proved this weekend by coming back and beating Kansas State twice. But LSU is just has more firepower. They've got the healthier 1-2 punch. I like their situation better in the bullpen, and they're at home. I mean, I think LSU takes it in three games.
Yeah, like I said, you make a nice case for Rice. They do have some other depth out there with Taylor Wall, and you know, Jordan Rogers threw well. He's been pretty consistent for them out of the bullpen this year. I just don't like their chances. I think LSU is the most complete team out there right now. They just the only caveat with LSU really is pitching depth. I don't see any other really real weakness with that LSU team. Do you?
And you know, they've really answered the pitching depth thing.
They did, I mean, in the SEC,
you know, not 100%, but you're right. In the SEC tournament, you know, when they get big performances from guys like, you know, Nolan Kane and you know, those kind of middle of the, you know, Bradshaw, you know, those kind of guys that they really needed to step forward. I mean, I don't think this team really has a discernible week.
I don't think so either. Well, we've got lots of podcast questions at podcast@baseballamerica.com. So I think we actually agreed on all of our choices, though, Aaron, which was
That's not very compelling podcasting, John.
Oh, that's your opinion. Titans, Seminoles, Rebels losing to the Cavaliers, and Tigers, LSU Tigers. So we have three out of the four home teams we're predicting to win on that side of the bracket. Let's take a couple of these podcast questions, podcast@baseballamerica.com. And we want to remind everyone that you can follow Baseball America on Twitter, twitter.com/baseballamerica. Pretty simple. Wendell in New Orleans actually wants to follow up a little bit on that LSU. He's the one who told me that you know, Rice is 10 and LSU is 7. He sees that he thought that Virginia, with their number 4 RPI, having to travel to Ole Miss is the biggest outrage. Talk about insane. He's definitely been listening to the podcast. He's talking like Aaron Fitt. How good are Rice's top two pitchers compared with Renato and Coleman for LSU? My feeling is the series goes 3 and Rice wins with better backline starting pitching. Ross has struggled overall last half of the year. And how big of a factor is schedule? Even though Rice was in Conference USA, they've done better than people expected this year. So obviously Conference USA with three teams advancing to Super Regionals. Aaron, what do you think, I guess, of that point? The real question that we already haven't answered, I guess, is Virginia at Ole Miss the biggest outrage in the field? Or are we over our outrage?
At this point, I think I'm mostly over my outrage. I think I expected Ole Miss to host that Super Regional as the higher seed. You know, I think just, you know, it would have been surprising if they had reversed course at this juncture and sent the Rebels to Charlottesville. But as for the other point that Wendell made about the starting pitching, you know, Renato and Coleman is I think for me at this point a much better duo.
Yep.
And if this was happening in, you know, early March, it's a different story. But Anthony Renato has dominant stuff. He's completely healthy. I mean, he's really looked good with that heavy sinking fastball and the curveball. And Lewis Coleman, of course, the SEC Pitcher of the Year. There's no question who the better 1-2 punch is here for me, John.
Yeah, I think the only one that I can compare with it is what you have over at Arizona State with Leak. And if he's healthy, Josh Spence. And that's a tough call. I think I would take Leak and Spence just because I'll take Leak out of all those pitchers as good as Renato has been. And as good as Lewis Coleman has been, I would take Leak over any of those guys. But
I would take Rice's duo because, like you mentioned, Spence, you know, he's not 100%. He's not 100%. I mean, he's back, but he's not 100%. So I'll take the two healthy guys.
That's going on a limb there, taking the healthy guys. We also had just a good comment email here from Michael Duncan. Good call on the Rice-Kansas State showdown, that Kansas State would win Saturday but lose overall. I think we both called that on last week's podcast. And despite the outcome, I still think Sam Houston State and Xavier should have been reversed in seeding. Overall, I'm glad us Rice fans could show Xavier and K-State and their fans a good weekend of college baseball. So a gracious email from Michael Duncan. Wasn't sure if you had any comments on that.
No, not really.
All right, well, Matt Purvis also emails, and this is a good one, about Southern Mississippi as we transition to the other side of the bracket. In your regional podcast, both of you said Southern Miss was glad to be there. You also predicted Elon or Georgia Tech would outslug Southern Miss to win the regional. Southern Miss had the highest batting average in the regional, hit the most home runs in the regional, had the best pitching in the regional. Do you think Southern Miss was just glad to be there? Don't ever count out a team that's on a mission. It's a great farewell for Corky Palmer. And I think that's a great transition for us, Aaron, to go into the other side of the bracket, Southern Miss at Florida. Talk a little bit about how did Southern Miss, which I don't think deserved to be in the tournament, how did they go to Atlanta and win that regional? Do you really kind of lay that one a little bit at Danny Hall? It really seemed like Coach Hall, who I think is a great guy and really respect, did not do his best with that roster this weekend.
No, I don't think he did. I think that's a big factor. Now, I'm not going to take anything away from Southern Miss, and we'll get to those guys in a second. But, I mean, Danny Hall made some real head-scratchers here. I thought it was a mistake to start Deck McGuire in the first game. I think that it was an even bigger mistake to bring Deck McGuire back on 2 days rest on Monday. The starting a freshman second baseman for defensive purposes and then having that guy make three errors and a costly loss, I mean – There were a number of things here that just didn't make sense, and it's a shame for Georgia Tech that it had to end that way. But I mean, give Southern Miss a lot of credit. I mean, these guys are, I didn't think the emailer is right, John. We were wrong about this one. I didn't think Southern Miss could swing the bats like this. They haven't really done it this year. I mean, they've had a couple of outbursts, but for the most part, since they lost Brian Dozier, this offense hadn't been the same. I mean, they did score 15 runs, I think, against Tulane in the conference tournament one game. So, I mean, there were flashes of it. But mostly they were winning games, scoring 3-5, 7 runs. I didn't think they'd score 17 runs against Elon and 10 against Georgia Tech and 12 in another game against Georgia. I just didn't see it coming. So, give Southern Miss credit. They're clearly a hot team right now. And I think a key for them has been – they don't have Dozier at shortstop, but the guy they plugged in at shortstop is a freshman, B.A. Volmuth, hit two home runs and drove in five in that 9-run second inning yesterday. So,
yeah, in one inning,
Southern Miss is a good team. If you look back to the scouting report that we ran on them earlier this season, right before their Cal State Fullerton series, when they got swept. right before that series, we ran a scouting report breaking them down, and it was pretty glowing, John. I mean, it talked about how good of a college baseball team they are. They may not be laden with professional prospects, but they find ways to beat you. They do everything right. They play good defense. They get timely hitting. They can hit and run and play the small ball where they need to. And I mean, this weekend I think they just had the bats going.
Well, here's the other thing. They almost always have good bullpens. They've had good bullpens there as long as I've been here. Chad Bradford is their biggest name, big league alumnus. He was a reliever there. I think that guy's name was Austin Tubb. It was another submarine right-hander.
Tyler Kahn, most recently.
Tyler Kahn. So, and now this year they got Cargill having a really nice year. And then I know I've talked to a couple scouts doing Mississippi draft coverage. We say, they're 1-2, are two pretty good guys. Now, they're small, Todd McGinnis and J.R. Ballinger, but those guys are going to keep Southern Miss in most games for 5, 6, 7 innings. And then Corky Palmer has done a great job, like I just said, over the last 10, 12, 15 years of putting together good bullpens. So they are a legitimate, dangerous team. All that said, I'm taking Florida. I think the Gators have more talent. I think the Gators are well coached. I think the Gators are the home team. I think I just have to think that a little bit of this Corky Palmer magic has to rub off at some time, or wear off, I should say, at some time. But it wouldn't shock me if Southern Miss went down there and won a game, because Florida is a really, really young team. But I think the Gators are going to get to Omaha a little bit ahead of schedule and get back to Omaha for the first time since 2005, which will be pretty impressive in just year two of the Kevin O'Sullivan regime there in Gainesville. Who are you picking in that one?
I'm going to take Florida also for the reasons you mentioned. I think these teams are actually kind of similar. I think that they're both, that statistically they don't blow you away. Florida is more talented, but you know, I think offensively and defensively they have similar styles. You know, but like you said, Florida's at home. I do think they're more talented. I like the way the middle of their lineup has been playing. Preston Tucker in particular has had a sensational freshman year and just kept on bashing this weekend.
He's got 83 RBIs now, Aaron. It's pretty crazy.
A single season school record at Florida, and they've had some sluggers pass through there. So, you know, it's a good athletic team, Avery Barnes and Matt Dandecker, and you know, they've got some veterans in there like Barnes and Brandon MacArthur, who's been around forever. You know, I think he is your age, John. I like Florida here.
I do too, but definitely want to give props, belated though they may be, to Southern Mississippi, which is just really impressive for Southern Miss to go out and win a regional. That's a big feather in their cap, and I do think it speaks well of Conference USA, which only got three teams in, but all three of them advanced to super regionals. That is a nice feather in the cap for that conference, which needed, I think, a boost like that for its reputation. TCU at Texas, an old Southwest Conference matchup going on in the super regional. The Horned Frogs won their first regional in 114 seasons of baseball, Aaron. That is hard to believe. But Jim Schlossnagel wins a regional, and now he takes the Horned Frogs down to Austin, where Texas coming off, I believe, the only word to use for that regional is epic, as Texas goes in 25 innings to beat Boston College, and then 7 runs in the ninth to beat Army in the championship game with a walk-off grand slam by Preston Clark. Texas, the number one national seed. I got to tell you, Aaron, I'm not feeling too great about Texas in some ways. They had to take 25 innings to beat BC, and they gave up 10 runs to Army. But I'm not going to pick against them at home. I'm very tempted to do it, but I think Austin Wood is on such a mission that if he needed to go out there and pitch right-handed, he'd get Texas to Omaha some way. I just don't see Texas squandering that effort that they just put forth in the last regional without getting Omaha.
I think you're probably right, John. I think this is a very interesting super regional, and like you, I went back and forth on it. I was very tempted to pick TCU because TCU has proven itself all year long against top opponents, and they played a great schedule, and their pitching staff is constructed similarly, John, to a team we'll talk about shortly here, the Clemson Tigers, in that they don't have a Chance Ruffin at the top or an Anthony Renato or any of those kind of guys. It's just 12 guys deep, and they're all about the same. They're all pretty good. It's just a matter of they're able to ride the hot hand, so to speak, and that's a nice luxury. But Texas has a pretty good luxury here too on the mound, and certainly in a 3-game super regional, I like Texas's top tier arms more. I think TCU actually, I like their offense a little bit more, but Ed Dish Falk runs can be hard to come by. I'll throw out the Army game on Sunday as chalk it up to fatigue a little bit. I'm going to take Texas here, but I think it could go either way. I really do.
I tell you, this is the one where I was most tempted, the ones we've talked about so far, where I was most tempted to pick the upset. I think, like you said, if I felt a little bit better about TCU's pitching, I think I would pick TCU. But I just can't quite get on board. They don't have a Lance Broadway. They don't have
Jake Arrieta.
Exactly. They don't have some of those guys they've had in the past, some of these bigger power arms, just some of these guys who've dominated. I mean, Broadway wasn't a power arm, but a guy really dominant at the college level. And they just don't quite have that. I don't think Kyle Winkler's there yet. Obviously, Tyler Lockwood's kind of backed up a little bit this year.
He was good. He was good this weekend, though.
I did notice that that's one of his best outings. And I guess the kid from New York, Greg Holley's been pretty good, but it doesn't seem like they just have that. Like you said, they're a little bit more reminiscent of Clemson. That's a good call. So fancy that, the national writer for baseball America on college baseball making a good call on TCU's team. So I think this is the one regional we're going to disagree about, Aaron. Clemson at Arizona State. Arizona State, the number 5 national seed. The Tigers with a late rally to bail out Aaron Fitt and beat Oklahoma State in the regional. I know that was one that you were sweating. So publicly, I'll announce it on the podcast. Aaron Fitt wins the John versus Aaron, Georgia Tech versus who's better, Georgia Tech or Clemson battle. One that had raged for 15 consecutive weeks, Aaron.
That's right.
And there was very little separation between those two teams all year. And the regionals provided that separation. But I'm already on record as Arizona State as my national championship pick. Aaron, explain why you think Clemson is going to beat Arizona State in the Super Regional.
Well, Arizona State's going to win the first game, John, because they've got Mike Leake. We know that. Nobody's going to beat Mike Leake. You see, that guy is otherworldly. But Josh Spence, you know, I mean, he's not himself. He's not 100%. He threw three innings this weekend, and granted, you know, they took him out with a 9-3 lead, I think. So maybe that was part of it. But, you know, I like Arizona State's arms after him. I mean, certainly Seth Blair was strong again. He's been very good down the stretch. And
he's been outstanding.
Mitchell Lampson and Jordan Swaggerty is a great duo back there in the bullpen. They've got Jason Franzblau pitching well. I mean, they've got their guys that they need on the mound.
I'm very frustrated that you beat me to the punch in saying Franzblau.
You know, but I honestly think offensively these two teams are pretty close. And is it crazy to say it, John, that Clemson might have an even better offense? I mean, you know, Arizona State is they've got a lot of depth. I mean, in some ways they're like Arkansas. They've got a lot of young players factoring into this lineup right now. You know, the Drew Maggies and the Richo Torreses and the Johnny Rudigers and the Zach McPhees. Those guys though don't scare me. I mean, as much as a Ben Paulson or a hot Kyle Parker, which he delivered a big hit yesterday, the game-winning hit. Wilson Boyd has been on fire for about six straight weeks now. I mean, you know, I like Clemson.
You're not convincing me on those guys. I'm sorry. There's no one in Clemson's lineup who's as productive or as good of a college player as Jason Kipnis.
That is true.
And then Carlos Ramirez has more power than anybody on either of these two teams. I like Cole Calhoun. I like how diverse Arizona State's lineup is as far as they can steal some bases. They can go with you on power. They're very patient. I think they are clearly a better offensive team than Clemson. I really do. I think Clemson's lineup is pretty short. Kyle Parker might have had a big hit last night, but that guy is kind of captain of the swing and miss team right now. I mean, he would fit nicely in Cal's lineup. So I'm not with you on that one. The difference maker for Clemson, if you'd said Chris Epps,
I was getting there.
Might have been there with you, but he's the difference maker. Chris Epps at the top of the lineup being an igniter, that starts to make me think that Clemson, that changes the dynamic of Clemson's lineup a little bit. But I think Arizona State, number one in their ballpark, number two with their coach. Pat Murphy's the offensive coach. This team, after all the talent they lost, is still crushing the ball. And I like their pitching. I do like the fact that Franzblau pitched well. I really like the fact that Seth Blair pitched well. I'm encouraged that Josh Spence gave him three innings against, as we've talked about all year, a very, very powerful Kent State lineup. And I think that was a good test for him. He's got a little more time off. I won't say that no one can beat Mike Leake because somebody beat Steven Strasburg. And Steven Strasburg's better than Mike Leake. But if I had one game to win in college baseball this year, it would probably be Mike Leake. That's probably the guy I would take. I've never heard anybody say a bad thing about the guy. I just don't think that he's not going to get to Omaha this year. So I understand your arguments about Clemson, though. I do think one thing that's a little underrated about Clemson is they can grind out at bats. I'm just not sold on the power, and I think you got to play a little bit of a power game in the desert at Arizona State.
I think certainly Arizona State is the safe pick, but I mean I just like the way Jeff Schaus and Ben Paulson and Wilson Boyd in particular, and also Kyle Parker a little bit, and Chris Epps. I mean, I like the way those guys have been swinging it. I think that they're going to hit some home runs out there. I'm going out on a limb. I will acknowledge that. Arizona State is the much safer pick, maybe the smarter pick, but I'm going to take Clemson.
Clemson is what's known as the stubborn pick. So.
The stubborn pick is right.
But I will also give this to Clemson. Here's the matchup to watch, I think, Aaron. Clemson's pitchers, they have a great strikeout-to-walk ratio. They've only walked 195 guys in 577 innings. Arizona State's drawn 350 walks. They have almost a 1-to-1 walk-to-strikeout ratio as a team offensively. And that's a Pat Murphy trademark for sure. So that's really the thing to watch. Honestly, the umpires are going to have a lot to do with how that series is determined, and the strike zone is going to have a lot to do with it. And if it's a tight strike zone, there's no way I don't think Clemson could go out there and win. But if the umpires are calling strikes, Clemson is going to fill up the strike zone, and they have lots of pitchers who can fill up the strike zone with quality stuff. I just think their biggest advantage, which is pitching depth, does not matter as much in a super regional as it matters in Omaha or as it matters in a regional. If it were a regional field, I could pick Clemson. In a super, I'm taking the Sun Devils.
You just made about four outstanding points in a row there, John. Great insights.
Every once in a while, that happens. Not usually. East Carolina at North Carolina, the final super regional. I think it's the one that both of us are going to be at. Are we going to both be at that, Aaron?
I believe so.
It's my wife's birthday this weekend, so I got to take at least one day and not watch baseball. But those are the two regionals I was at. I did not see North Carolina play this weekend. I saw Coastal in Kansas, and then I was able to go see East Carolina in a thrilling regional final last night against South Carolina. That was a tremendous baseball game. And I got to tell you what, I did a little research on this today, Aaron. East Carolina and North Carolina played twice during the regular season. Both times, East Carolina basically has two left-handed pitchers, Summers and Brandt. And Summers, the freshman who threw last night, Patrick Summers, he started the first game, and Brandt started the second game, and Brandt relieved in the first game as well. So Kevin Brandt against North Carolina this year pitched, 10 innings. He struck out 13. He only gave up 7 hits. He did not give up a run. But East Carolina has only faced Patrick Johnson. They have not faced Adam Warren. They have not faced Alex White, who obviously is not at his best right now. Hamstring, blister, draftitis, whatever it is, that guy's not pitching well. His last two starts have been two of the worst of his college career. What do you think? Who has the advantage in this one? East Carolina can't pitch Kevin Brandt every game. Do you see East Carolina coming to Chapel Hill and winning that super regional?
No. I'm curious to see how much they will use Kevin Brandt because, I mean, Seth Maness and Chris Heston have been there 1-2 all year long. And then, really Brad Mincy has been their number three. I mean, are they going to now, completely throw away their rotation in order to start the lefty? Maybe they will.
Absolutely.
I suspect they use Brandt as their super bullpen guy. And, first sign of trouble, you bring him in. But I don't know. I mean, I think it's an interesting question. East Carolina, as we've been saying all year long, I think is a really good college team with a really good college offense. And they've got a few arms out there. They're not overpowering arms. But, I picked North Carolina to win the national championship coming into this thing. And that's because I really like their experience. I like their stars. I think Dustin Ackley and Kyle Seager and Mark Fleury, et cetera. Seager and Ackley in particular, they can hit lefties even if you throw Kevin Brandt out. Maybe they didn't do great against those guys this year, but North Carolina on the mound to me is far superior. This park is not as offensive as Clark LeClaire Stadium. I don't think East Carolina is going to score the way it did this past weekend against North Carolina's pitching staff in that ballpark. So I'm going to take the home team here.
Yeah, I think I'm going to do that too. I will say that Brandt pitched very well in the regional against South Carolina. He pitched into the ninth inning. Heston pitched poorly in both outings. He pitched poorly against Binghamton. He pitched poorly last night in relief against South CAC. So I think you are going to see Kevin Brandt as a starter, and I'll be stunned if you don't. And I don't think Heston's in the weekend rotation for that team anymore. They pitched him in the first game against Binghamton. That's kind of he's like a number three or number four starter role, really. And I think you have to go matchup. I think everybody on the planet knows the way to beat North Carolina is to throw a left-hander with breaking stuff.
And that's what I would do.
And when you have somebody who has had success against them already, I think you have to do that. So to me, the difference maker for this for North Carolina is Adam Warren. I think there are very few teams in the country that can have their number one guy and have him stumbling down the stretch like North Carolina has in Alex White, and it's almost incidental. It almost doesn't matter for North Carolina. They have such great pitching depth, A, but B, they have a guy in Adam Warren who will be a number one on 95% of the rest of the teams. Adam Warren will be a number one at TCU. He'd be the number one at Southern Miss. He'd be the number one at Florida. He'd be the number one at Clemson. He'd be the number one at East Carolina. He might be the number one at Virginia right now.
Florida State, too. I mean,
he'd
you're
be
right.
He'd be the number one at Florida State. He'd be the number one at Arkansas. He'd be the number one, maybe pushing it to be the number one at Rice right now. But with their injuries, he'd be the number one guy.
Fullerton, maybe?
It's touch and go. But that guy, with his experience and the fact that he's up to 94 these days, he's sitting with an average to plus fastball, average slider, tremendous college command. That guy's a true college number one starter. And that gives you the luxury. If North Carolina wants to, they could go Adam Warren in the first game and hold Alex White. And, boy, if they need Alex White of the bullpen, then go to Alex White of the bullpen, which we saw him really excel last year in Omaha. And even in the game where Virginia beat him, you saw Alex White 94-97 and dominant for two innings, and then they got to him. So Adam Warren is the difference maker as far as I'm concerned for North Carolina. That's what he makes that go. So I'm very excited, Aaron, that neither one of us lost our Omaha pick in the regional round. That's a good thing. So before we wrap up the podcast, let's go ahead and take two more podcast questions at podcast@baseballamerica.com. Aaron, this is a good question from Andrew Thurmond. So he read a story on ESPN.com that destroyed Texas and Boston College for allowing their closer to go so deep in that 25-inning game. Isn't using Drew Pomeranz and Deck McGuire, among others, on 2 days rest much more dangerous? Also, he saw that there were a lot of pitchers. More pitchers were in the 120-pitch club this weekend. In Austin Woods' case, particularly, I think the ramps are a bit ridiculous. He's a senior playing for a national championship. Who knows if he'll get to the big leagues? I understand getting upset about abusing a pitcher every weekend. Playing the postseason is different. And that's Andrew Thurmond, Duke Law School student, asking that question. So, Aaron, I put it to you. I talked to Mike Belfiore today and getting ready to write a story about it. What did you think? What's your reaction to the deep pitch counts of in the Texas-BC game for Austin Wood and Mike Belfiore?
I think Andrew, the emailer, is right on. I think it's much more dangerous to bring back your ace on 2 days rest after, especially, you know, Drew Pomeranz pitched 8 innings. Mike Minor threw 9 innings. I mean, Deck McGuire had a long outing. I mean, those guys all threw over 100 pitches. You're going to bring those guys back on 2 days rest? To me, that's much worse. I agree with the emailer. I think that Belfiore in particular, I don't think that was at all egregious. That guy, he went 9 innings, and Mick Aoki took him out after 9 innings, even though he was dominating. He's not a typical one inning closer. People on the national level who don't understand college baseball need to understand that it's not the same as in Major League Baseball, where you've got a closer who throws 3 outs. It's not how it works. I mean, Belfiore's been extended this year. He threw 5 or 6 innings at Duke. He was fresh. And he's, you know, there's nothing wrong with that to me. And Austin Wood, you know, maybe you're getting a little bit closer to the line. You're going to throw 169 pitches over 13 innings. But again, I mean, you know, Texas is I think, John, a point that you made yesterday, one of the most powerful brand names in sports. And I think it means a lot for Austin Wood to get Texas to Omaha. I think it's, you know, probably you can make. I think you can make a case that it means more to him to get Texas to Omaha than it does for his professional career, and that's his choice. And you know, I understand that the coaching staff does have a responsibility to protect its arms, but I think that one's a little bit hazy for me.
Yeah, I don't know why I'm doing that, but I don't think there's any way that you can defend 169 pitches. I do think you can try to understand it and not condemn it offhand as wrong. And, you know, I was watching Bill Maher the other day, and he was talking about food. And he was talking about, he was classifying food as good or evil, you know. And that's the thing. That's the mentality that people have these days. Food isn't good or evil. I don't even care how processed it is or how what the motives of a company making that are. I don't even care what the motives are. There's nothing evil or inherently wrong, I guess, about pitching Austin Wood 169 pitches. Is it optimal? No, it's not. It's certainly not optimal for his pro career. And this is a guy who at times has been 90-93 in short bursts with a pretty nice slider. He is a prospect. But to not even understand the situation, to not understand the fact that clearly this guy's stuff was still pretty gosh darn good, that after 12 innings or 11.2 or whatever it was, that he had a no-hitter, that tells you more than the pitch count. All that said, Aaron, I think all these accounts I've read where he was throwing up in the 17th inning, I might have taken the guy out after he was tossing his cookies, you know? I think that might have been a telltale sign that he had been extended a little bit too far. That's more telling than a pitch count. But to try to tell somebody that's wrong, if that's what they wanted to do, I just think it's kind of ridiculous to be judgmental when you don't know Austin Wood and you don't know Augie Garrido. I'm going to trust Augie Garrido's 41 years in college baseball more, and the fact that he's there and that he's in the dugout and that he recruited Austin Wood and that he's been at practice with Austin Wood, at least occasionally for in Augie's case. He's been in practice with Austin Wood for 4 years. He's been in the dugout with him for 200-plus games. He knows what it means for Austin Wood as a college senior at the University of Texas to go to Omaha as a Texas Longhorn. That means more than getting drafted by the Pittsburgh Pirates or the Kansas City Royals or the New York Yankees for that matter. So I think to not acknowledge that and to not recognize that's a possibility is pretty ignorant of people. And it's especially ignorant when it's a Texas Longhorn involved. And even Mike Belfiore today talking about that, he didn't even know what Boston College was in high school. So he acknowledged it was different. And he is a bigger prospect. And guess what? He was taken out. But he also went into that weekend anticipating that he would start. He went into the weekend anticipating he would throw 100 pitches in a game. Mick Aoki anticipated it. And that was their plan, according to Mick Aoki and Mike Belfiore, from the day they were in the bubble when practice started for Boston College. They're indoors. And their plan was, you're going to close for us, but the longer the season goes on, the more extended you will be, and by the postseason, you'll be ready to start a game if we need you. That was their plan from day one. They executed that plan to perfection, and that's a reason, one of the big reasons I think that Mike Belfiore was so good in that game, 92-93 into his sixth inning of work with a dirty slider at 79-82. And that's why he was able to shut down Texas on 3 hits in 9-plus innings and strike out, 13? And you can't do that unless you're prepared to do it. So I think the criticism of it is pretty knee-jerk, pretty stupid, pretty ignorant of college baseball, and frankly disrespectful of those players and what college baseball means and what the regional means. So I'm pretty tired of it. Glad to have that, hopefully, in the past. Looking forward to addressing that on baseballamerica.com in an article. Aaron, you want to take one more podcast question, or should we wrap it up?
It's your call, John. You're in charge.
Oh, we got plenty of these, so I'll get one more. Vermont Cavalier D. Dickey wants to ask, with only a handful of hosts fail to advance, great analysis, great stuff. Your analysis turned out to be very accurate, but surely you could name 5 surprises from regionals. What was the biggest surprise, I guess, out of regionals for you, Aaron?
Well, obviously, I think it's Southern Miss. I mean, there's no question. I gave them very, very, very little chance to win that regional. In a regional with 3 teams that were all considerably more offensive, for Southern Miss to slug the way it did and win that thing, it was shocking to me.
I think that's one of the other shocks was Georgia going out like suckers. Losing to Ohio State, was really surprised by that. Very surprised by the post-game comments. Dave Pernoe calling out his team, calling out a couple individual players on his team specifically. I was quite surprised by that. That Tallahassee regional had a lot going on. Very surprised and embarrassed for Ohio State to get beat 37-6. That was a pretty big shock to me. I really did not see that happening.
Certainly, you never expect that. other surprises for me. Very disappointed by Texas A&M preseason number one. I mean, you know, hey, we gotta wear it on that one. That pick didn't work out well for us. But you know, that team was too talented to perform the way it did down the stretch and in regionals. Very disappointing.
I think that's a fair way to put it. It was a very disappointing season for Texas A&M. So hopefully, it was not a very disappointing podcast for those of you who listened. Aaron, great stuff. If I don't record it right, we won't do it again. So thanks for taking so much time and being on the podcast. Look forward to having you back in the office. Get back safe from California.
Thanks, John.
Okay, for Aaron Fitt, I'm John Manuel. We'll see you next week on the Baseball America College Podcast. Until then, so long, everybody.